Victoria, would you please do the roll call?
Yes, Dr. Burton?
Here.
Ms. Prager?
Here.
Ms. Frost?
Here.
Dr. Heinrich? Dr. James?
Here.
Mr. Logie?
Here.
Ms. Solomon?
Here.
Dr. Wright?
Here.
Thank you, you have quorum.
Thank you. So let's start off with initial investigative reviews in section two. Case 2153, Tracy, would you read us a summary, please?
Yes, case 2153, the complainant is Jane Tour, the respondent is Deborah Chapman, DVM. On October 5th, 2020, Bella Bear, a two-year-old female English bulldog, was presented to respondent for a laceration repair. The dog was anesthetized, the laceration was sutured, and the dog recovered. After lunch, staff found the dog deceased in her kennel. And the committee concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded the board find ERS 3222-3211, gross negligence, treatment of a patient or practice of veterinary medicine resulting in injury, unnecessary suffering, or death that was caused by carelessness, negligence, or the disregard of established principles or practices, and malpractice for treatment in a manner contrary to accepted practices and with injurious results for failure to perform a pre-anesthetic exam, failure to provide a diagnosis prior to surgery, and failure to provide adequate post-surgical monitoring. And ERS 3222-32, number 21, as it relates to R311-502-H2, within 6 hours before anesthesia was administered or surgery was performed, the dog's diagnosis and general condition was not reported in the medical record. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0. And you should have received an additional statement from a staff member, Lindsay Bentley, and that was received on June 14th, 2021.
Okay. And we have the respondent. Your statement. Thank you for being here today. You have 5 minutes to address the board.
Good morning. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to respond to the investigative committee's recommendations on this case. On October 4th, 2020, I received a call from the owner who said that her English bulldog, Bella Bear, had been attacked by one of our other dogs and had a bleeding lip that needed to be sutured. I had the owner text me a picture of the lip so I could see if this was something that required immediate attention. When I looked at the picture, I could see that the lip was not bleeding and the laceration appeared small. So I asked the owner if she could bring the dog in the next morning. As noted in the medical record, Bella arrived at 8 a.m. on October 5th, 2020. On presentation, I conducted a physical exam immediately prior to starting the laceration repair at 8:20 a.m. The results of the exam are included in the medical record. The record includes my diagnosis, a lacerated lip, Bella's CPR, and my assessment of the dog's condition, namely that the results of my pre-op exam were all within normal limits. I therefore failed to see how the committee could have proposed a violation of administrative regulation R3-11-502-H2, which requires an exam 6 hours prior to an anesthetic surgery. My exam was conducted within 20 minutes of the procedure, and the results are recorded in the medical record. This regulation was not violated. The laceration repair was uneventful, and I've provided you a copy of the anesthesia record, which includes another TPR at the time of induction and 7 additional TPRs and blood pressure recordings that were taken for the 45 minutes following the procedure. This was a simple, routine, small laceration repair. There were no medical complications during the procedure or during recovery, and Bella showed no signs of respiratory distress or other adverse side effects from anesthesia. For an hour following the procedure, Bella was continuously monitored by my technician, and I personally saw Bella alive and doing well at noon as I left for lunch. Then at 1 p.m., my technician went to check on Bella and discovered that she had unexpectedly passed away in her kennel. I understand and sympathize with the owners for their loss. As stated in my response, I had one of my own dogs pass away unexpectedly following an anesthetic procedure, and I sincerely feel the pain of Bella's owners. But Bella did not pass away as a result of anything my staff or I did, that fell below the standard of care. In fact, we will never know the cause of death because, unfortunately, we did not have a necropsy report. What we do know is that all anesthetic medications were appropriate and were given within the range of recommended dosage. Also, please keep in mind that Bella was only under anesthesia for approximately 3 minutes. This was not a lengthy or complicated anesthetic procedure. We also know that Bella was examined prior to the procedure and appropriately monitored during and after the procedure. I have reviewed and relived this case repeatedly, and honestly, I cannot find one thing that I would have done differently in this case. This is just a horrible, unexpected death of a bulldog that was not the result of any breach in the standard of care or professional negligence on my part. Thank you.
Thank you. Step back. We have the complainant. Could you please state your name for the record?
Dana Tilton.
Thank you. And give you up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Okay. I come before you today on behalf of the Voice of Bella Bear. Unfortunately, the neglect, malpractice, and careless acts of Dr. Chapman cost Bella Bear her life as she was about to turn 3 years old. Bella was not just a dog in her family. She was our daughter, sister, and granddog. We are always willing to go the endless, countless journeys to meet the needs of our dog, and no price tag is too big for their well-being and health. They trust us to take care of them. We took her in for what we thought was an emergency in our eyes that Monday morning on October 5th. After contacting Desert Cross Emergency Line on September 4th, we were advised it could wait until Monday morning at 8 a.m., which is where we were. Still thinking it was an emergency and no consultation or advisement was given from Dr. Chapman that it was not. As I stood at the desk signing the consent and reading the form in which states there's no one on property 24 hours a day from the hours of 5 p.m. to 8 a.m. or on weekends, I thought we were in the clear for Bella Bear's procedure, being it was a Monday morning. Someone would be there. I was absolutely wrong, and that cost Bella her life. Apparently, everyone goes to lunch at the same time, despite of how many procedures are scheduled or how many patients are recovering. I called at about 10:30 in the morning to check on Bella and was told she was doing well, that it was a very quick procedure. I asked if I could pick her up and bring her home before 2 o'clock. Would advise no, that they would have to watch her for recovery. At 1:45, as I was driving to pick my husband up to pick Bella Bear up, Dr. Chapman called me to tell me Bella Bear had passed from what she thought was a reaction to cardiac arrest from anesthesia. As a medical professional myself, but providing care for humans, not animals, the neglect and malpractice performed on our Bella Bear would never go unnoticed, be pushed to the side, especially if someone's loved one's life was lost during the recovery phase. I now regretfully have to live with my decision of trusting a veterinarian professional day in and day out with my baby girl because her neglect, she is no longer with us. I would give anything in this world for one more bear hug. Please take into consideration the hurt, grief, and sadness this has brought to my family. Unfortunately, I'm speaking on behalf of one of the rural families in the Safford, Arizona that are dealing with grief and regrets of allowing Debbie Chapman to professionally care for their animals. There are many more stories out there.
Okay.
And
I can rebut what was said, right? We haven't used our 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay. I just have a couple things to say. Last time I was here and I testified, I did not get to hear what Dr. Chapman said, but I, when I went in to speak to her and wanted some answers and really felt like might get some answers, two things that she just said. She said that it was pretty much an uneventful surgery, that nothing had was out of the ordinary. She told me and my husband that because of the elongated esophagus, that they had a terrible time getting the tube down Bella's throat, and, sorry. There was one other drug thing, and I'm just upset because the day that we went in and talked to her, she did say it was related to anesthesia. Now she's saying it's not related to anesthesia. The other thing I wanted to say, this was the thing. She said she wouldn't do anything different, but she told me and my husband that if that was her dog, she would not have done that procedure, except for some people like their animals to look pretty. This is Bella. Yeah, we think she's beautiful, but she's a bulldog with a big overbite. Had nothing to do with her looking pretty. So those are things that she did directly say to us. So to sit here and say she wouldn't have done something differently, if it was her own dog, she wouldn't have done the procedure. And I just like to say,
ma'am, could you state your name for the record, please?
I'm Lucy Tour, and I'm Shane's mom. My son could not even go in and pick up his dog's ashes because he was so upset. And literally when I went in that day, the reason for me going in was really, I believe in the veterinarian profession, and I really believe that she was going to give me some kind of answers that I could go out and tell my son, look, this just couldn't have been prevented. There was nothing that could have been done. But when we were in there, my husband was like, I mean, she brought up her own dog, she brought up things, and we were like, where's the empathy? Where's the sympathy? Where's just, none of it was like, I'm so sorry about your dog. I mean, I know in the eyes of the law that pets are considered property, but they are so much more than property. And when we go to professionals, we expect those professionals to make decisions that they would make on their own dog. My husband said, at the point when you were having trouble getting the tube down her throat, did you think of stopping the procedure? And she said, no, it was fine, but I would have recommended to them later that they got it fixed. It just was like so many things that day could have stopped. And the first thing that could have stopped is she could have had a consultation with my son and his wife and told them that she didn't think that the dog really needed that to be fixed. Because the whole reason they were there was not so that she didn't have a scar. She was there because they were worried because she plays rough with the other dogs. She was not attacked by one of their dogs. Their dogs play rough together. And they were worried that it was going to keep bleeding and get infected. They didn't have a consultation. In fact, my son said, he said to me, Mom, when Bella walked down the hall with the technician, I thought after we filled out the paperwork that we would go down and see Bella again. And then they just came out and said, oh yeah, we have to do the surgery, the sutures, but we have to put her under. And the whole thing was when Dana called and said, you know, can we come and pick up the dog? They said the dog was awake and breathing well. She said, can I come pick up the dog and or can I come pick up Bella? And they said, no, she needs to be monitored. That says to me that someone is watching the dog, not that everyone just left and went to lunch. When my husband addressed that, she said that that is standard procedure. And she said that nobody wants to, that was very expensive to have someone sit and watch the dogs, and no one wants to pay for that. And I guarantee you that people think those dogs are being watched after surgery, and that if she would have said to my son, it's gonna be $100 extra because you have a bulldog. Bulldogs, number one, have breathing issues, and number two, he has this esophagus problem that my son didn't even know about. So she really should have been watched, even more maybe than other dogs. And so I just think that this is just neglect. And it pains me to say that about a veterinarian. It really does. I wanted to find answers and I didn't even find empathy. I found her telling me a story about how her dog died. And never once did she even tell, I'm so sorry for your loss. I'm so sorry that your son is having nightmares for the fact that he feels like he should.
We're over your 5 minutes.
I'm sorry, okay.
All right, yeah.
Thank you so much.
Can we wrap it up?
I just meant that my son, I told him, my son is having nightmares because he doesn't know how his dog died because nobody was there. Was his dog gagging? Was his dog, you know, crying? What was going on with his dog before his dog died? And he doesn't know because nobody can tell him because no one was there. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Dr. Wright, you are the lead on this one.
Yeah, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So first, I'm sorry about your loss. And sorry out there in person to see you. I do have some questions revolving around the case. I don't necessarily agree with the findings for the pre-antithesis exam, and I'm seeing things here, so I'm kind of curious about that. But really, it's the post-operative monitoring is kind of my question. What's going on? What's happening here? Unfortunately, with Bulldog, this is a known complication. I do Bulldog surgeries very often. It's one of those things where it's very hard. I had a dog yesterday where intubating was almost blind, basically. You just can't see the back of the throat. That's a very common thing to see in Bulldogs. But again, we have to mitigate these factors and deal with things to try and reduce risk as much as possible. And that's kind of where my questions are going to resolve around is how do we reduce that risk as much as we possibly can. So I would make a motion to move this to an informal to seek more information.
Second.
The motion on the floor, any second to move case 2143 to an informal. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, let's do a roll call.
Dr. Byrne?
Aye.
Ms. Krager?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James?
Aye.
Mr. Lohi?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Wright?
Aye.
Motion passes.
We'll move case 2153 to an informal. That concludes that case. Next up is 2152. Tracy, did you read us the summary of the case?
Yes. Case 2152, the complainant is Dr. Leslie Ivey. The respondent is Deborah Chapman, DVM. On October 22nd, 2020, the respondent had a consultation with the mother of the owner of Schnapps, a 5-year-old male schnauzer that was treated by a complainant in Texas. Respondent made some comments with respect to the treatment that was provided to the dog. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded the board dismissed this issue with no violations. And the motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
And we do have the respondent. Do you want to address the board on this case?
Good morning.
Please state your name for the record.
Dr. Debbie Chapman.
Thank you.
Had an afternoon appointment scheduled for a consultation with a client on the clipboard. The staff had just received medical record notes. When I went into the room, it was the mother of the patient. Her daughter was in Texas with her dog that had been sick. They were in curbside only, and she had been able to talk to a veterinarian, and she just was worried. I just glanced over the medical records in the exam room, made musings on, you know, what everything was going. I mentioned that I found it curious that they had given the dog Depo-Medrol, given that the dog had been diagnosed with pancreatitis. Nothing that it was wrong, just in the looking over, I wonder why they did that. The only other thing I said was, I think that they could probably do the enteroflux twice a day, but that was it. And it was maybe a 5-minute FaceTime talk with the owner. Probably 30 minutes later, one of the technicians came back and said that somebody from that clinic in Texas was on the phone and wanted to talk to me. I don't know what the woman called and told them, but she just asked what I had said. I told her what I had said, and that was it. There was nothing egregious said. There was nothing anything else. It was just a second opinion.
Thank you. We do not have the complainant. And Dr. James, you are the lead.
Yeah, so this case is kind of a weird one because of the situation where
they didn't actually see the pet, it was more of a consult. I don't have anything to work on where I think there was something that was done that fell below the standards of care. I don't typically do this kind of consultation, but I definitely don't see anything that was said that was wrong. So I would support the investigative committee's findings of no violations in the case of 2152.
Second.
A motion on floor to dismiss 2152. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? That motion passes. 2152 is dismissed. And that takes us down to 2157. Tracy, would you read us the summary? Oops, sorry. Got you running in 10 different ways. Oh, we need to get somebody on the phone. Let's get them on the phone now.
Tracy at the Veterinary Board.
Hi.
Hello, the board is ready to review your case. I'm going to put you on speakerphone with them, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right, so we're on case number 2157. And Tracy, would you read us the summary, please?
Yes. On October 23rd, 2020, Capriccio, a 7-year-old male Arabian Parisian mix, was castrated by a respondent. During the castration, the horse was awakened and had to be administered additional sedation to complete the surgery. That evening, the horse began bleeding, therefore respondent went to the barn to evaluate the horse and stop the bleeding. Over the next several days, complainant sent pictures of the horse's scrotum to respondent to keep her updated on the swelling. Complainant was concerned the horse's swelling was worsening and respondent was not assisting. On November 4, 2020, complainant sought out a second opinion by Southwest Equine where corrective surgery was performed. And the committee concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded the board find ARS 3220232 number 11, gross negligence, treatment of a patient or practice of veterinary medicine resulting in injury, unnecessary suffering, or death that was caused by carelessness, negligence, or the disregard of established principles or practices, for disregarding a horse owner's concerns and not referring the horse elsewhere for medical attention if respondent was not able to evaluate the animal in a timely fashion. The motion was approved with vote of 4-0.
And we do have the respondent here, correct?
And David Stoll, appearing as legal counsel for Dr. McKinney.
Thank you. Dr. McKinney, please state your name for the record.
Dr. Rachel McKinney.
Thank you. And you have 5 minutes to address the board.
All right, thank you for having me today. While I'm pleased that the vet board had no medical concerns related to the actual routine castration that I performed on this horse on October 23rd, I respectfully disagree with the proposed gross negligence violation for the following reasons. First of all, I want to dispel the notion that there was a lack of follow-up on my part after the surgery. I stayed in almost daily contact with the owner through my staff and through pictures starting on the day of the surgery. The first pictures that were showed of the horse said that the horse had a bleed. I received the pictures from a text and a text from the owner at 8:23 p.m. and quickly responded that evening and went out to see the horse. The bleeding was addressed and stopped. The following day, the owner sent us a message. She said that Capricio was doing well and eating some hay and grain. 2 days later, on October 26th, at 8:40 a.m., my office called to see how Capricio was doing, and we were told that everything was good, that there was no bleeding, and he was eating and walking around. A few days later, on October 29th, the owner called to give us an update and reported that he was doing well, but she indicated that there was still some swelling. The concern was not ignored. We asked that she send us pictures of the swelling so that we and myself could look at it to see if there was anything to be concerned about. The owner sent those photos to our business Facebook page at 2:35 p.m. I reviewed them within 30 minutes of them being sent, and the swelling looked normal to me. I then instructed my office to call the owner and tell her that the swelling appeared normal, to make sure that the owner was exercising the horse in the round pen and hosing him with cold water for 15 minutes up to 3 times a day. My office called and gave the information at 3:06 p.m. The next photos were received on Monday, November 2nd, when the owner called and requested a refill of the pain medication I had prescribed. I authorized the pain medication refill, but also recommended starting Capricio on antibiotics because I was concerned about a possible infection from what I saw in the still photos. I also asked the owner to send me a video so that I could see how the horse was moving. She never sent the video. Instead, the owner called the next day, told my staff that she had an appointment with another veterinarian and that she would be disputing all of our charges on her credit card, and then hung up the phone. At this point, I believe that we had been fired and had no veterinary client relationship with the owner as of November 3rd phone call. As you look back on the timeline of events, you can see that not only was I in ongoing communications with the owner about Capricio and how he was doing following the procedure, but I was extremely timely in responding and addressing any concerns that were raised, and was monitoring the horse's recovery and status through pictures and phone calls with the owner. I therefore fell to see how I was grossly negligent with regard to my fellow follow-up care, and feel that I did not violate any statute or regulation of the Practice Act in connection with the castration procedure and aftercare that I provided. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we got the complainant on the phone. Would you please state your name for the record?
Yep, it's Heidi Cornelia.
Thank you. I'll give you up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Okay, thanks. I'd just like to say thank you to the board for bringing this case to light, and Tracy for all of your help. I never want anyone else to ever have the experience I had with Dr. McKinney's practice again, feeling completely helpless in a sheer panic and fear for my animal's well-being, with no direct number to call and no professional person to talk with, possibly one of the most terrifying things that I've ever had to go through as a horse owner. Overall, I believe that Dr. McKinney's practice should not be performing mature castrations unless they can provide adequate aftercare medication and instructions with an emergency referral if needed. Not only has all of this put a huge financial strain on me, but also an emotional strain too. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Byrne, you are the lead on this case.
Yes, after reviewing the records and the testimony, I'm going to go ahead and agree with the investigative committee and make a recommendation that we move this case to an informal interview.
Second. A motion on the floor and a second to move case 2157 to an informal. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, let's do a roll call.
Dr. Byrne?
Aye.
Ms. Quaker?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James?
Aye.
Mr. Logie?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Wright? Dr. Wright?
All right, but let the record show that we lost Dr. Wright, and we'll...
He's back on.
And your vote was a yes?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so that motion passes, and 2157 will move to an informal. Next up is our three pack. It's start off with 2154. Tracy, would you read us the summary, please?
Yes. Case 2154, the complainant is Todd Gersler, MD. The respondent is Olivia Pan, DVM. On October 10th, 2020, Dieter, a 6-year-old male Papillon, was presented to respondent due to vomiting and diarrhea. Complainant reported that the dog had chewed on a pork bone the previous evening. Respondent examined the dog. She suspected the dog had pancreatitis and treated the dog conservatively with sub-Q fluids and Serenia. The dog was discharged with medications. Later, complainant sent respondent videos of the dog as he seemed to be worsening. Respondent dispensed pain medication, which complainant promptly picked up and administered to the dog. The dog continued to decline, therefore was presented to an emergency facility. Complainant was advised that the dog was stable and the dog was discharged. Complainant picked up his wife, and while on the way to another emergency facility, the dog passed away. And the committee concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded the board to find ARS 3220-32, number 11, gross negligence, treatment of a patient or practice of veterinary medicine resulting in injury, unnecessary suffering, or death that was caused by carelessness, negligence, or the disregard of established principles for lack of performing, recommending diagnostics, or referring the pet elsewhere for further treatment. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
And we do have the respondent and counsel. Are you going to address the board? Yes. Please state your names for the record.
Dr. Olivia Pan.
And David Stoll, appearing as legal counsel for Dr. Pan.
Thank you. I'll give you 5 minutes to address the board.
Thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak to you. Before addressing the committee's gross negligence recommendation, I want to share my personal experience with the investigative committee on May 4th, 2021. Going through this veterinary board complaint process for the first time after practicing medicine for more than 15 years has been an extremely emotional and disheartening experience, one that I hope to never go through again. What I expected to be a respectful, objective, investigative meeting last month honestly felt like an inquisition. The lead investigator assigned to my case appeared to have made up his mind before I even called on the phone to answer so that he could hear my side of things. Also, at several points during the phone call, the questions asked of me were frankly rude, combative, and accusatory. Going into the meeting, I was under the impression that the committee was investigative, not prosecutorial. I was clearly mistaken. Again, you do not know me because I have never been here before, but I want you to know that I strive to practice quality medicine with every case I see. Recommendations are made based on the patient's physical exam at the time of the presentation. Diagnostic imaging and laboratory tests are recommended based on whether it would bring value to the patient's treatment. In this particular case, abdominal radiographs had poor specificity for pancreatitis. Also, baseline blood work neither confirms nor refutes whether a patient has pancreatitis. Canine PLI tests and abdominal ultrasound have the best diagnostic value in this regard, but neither are offered by my hospital. All these things were explained to the husband, complainant, who is a physician. Dieter's presenting complaint on Saturday, October 10th, was vomiting and diarrhea that had developed after the owners had given him a leftover pork bone the night before. Vomiting and diarrhea cases like these are seen on a daily basis and typically do not require hospitalization and IV fluids. Because Dieter was stable at the time he presented, conservative treatment was recommended and approved by the owner. The treatment plan included sub-Q fluids, anti-nausea injection, oral anti-nausea medication to go home with, and probiotics to go home. I also recommended a bland diet at home. I stand by that initial assessment and treatment plan. Later that morning when the owner called, it was not because the dog's symptoms of vomiting and diarrhea had worsened. The owner was concerned about the way the dog was acting, and so we instructed him to send us a video. The owner's concerns were not ignored, as was suggested by the investigative committee, and I promptly reviewed the video and responded to the owner. I let the owner know that the dog appeared to be whining in pain, which is not unusual in cases of suspected pancreatitis. I therefore recommended the owner return to the practice to pick up some buprenorphine for pain. Again, the owner's concern was not ignored. During the investigative committee meeting, the lead investigator said, without any supporting evidence whatsoever, that I was rushing to get done due to the fact that it was a Saturday. Nothing could be further from the truth. As for me and my team, Saturday is a normal work day like any other, and was not rushing to get out the door. In fact, these clients call the first thing in the morning, we fit them in at 8:30 a.m. despite an already booked appointment schedule. I think it's also important to note that initially the owners did not even want to come in as they did not want to pay for the emergency fee and decided to see if another hospital could fit them in. They called back 5 minutes later and said they were coming in presumably because they couldn't get in to see another veterinarian. Another interesting aspect of this case that appears to have been overlooked by the committee is the fact that after the owners picked up the pain medication from us, they took Dieter to an emergency clinic later that day, but elected to take the pet home after the ER took the patient in to check his vitals. I do not know whether it was because they did not want to stay outside due to curbside service or if they left because they were told that the patient was stable. Regardless, these patients who have medical background elected to leave. I therefore fail to see how, according to the committee recommendation, I was grossly negligent for not referring the pet elsewhere for further treatment when I saw them first thing in the morning. Again, when I saw the dog, he was stable, and even later when I reviewed the video, he was in need of pain medication, not a referral. In any event, the owners on their own went to the ER, but didn't stay long enough to get their dog treated. They took the dog home. Then later that day, when Dieter's condition worsened, he was taken again to another ER hospital where he rested and unfortunately passed away. By then, Dieter was well out of my care and unfortunately was cremated without having a necropsy performed. As a result, we will never know definitively what the cause of death was, but I know that it was not the result of any substandard care that was provided by me or my staff. I therefore respectfully disagree with the committee's recommendation and feel that this complaint should be dismissed with no violation. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything to add, Mr. Stoll?
No, I stand behind that. I don't see how the committee came to their conclusion.
Okay, so I'd be curious if I may ask, can I ask Mr. Stoll a question?
Sure. I'm asking.
Maybe one at this time, though it's not really the appropriate time to interact, but it'll help you if you could just limit it.
Okay, I guess interrupt and tell him that no, don't answer that. Okay, if it's wrong, it's just one question. Did you have that same perception that Dr. Pan had about the questioning from the IC?
Absolutely. I reviewed it.
You were there. Were you there?
No, I was not.
You were not?
No, you were on the phone. Well, you were there personally. I was on the phone.
You know, I have so many cases. I don't know if I was here in person or if I...
Dave, you were here.
I was, yeah. Yes. I'm confusing it with another case involving the same person that listened to the transcript. But yeah, I had it in my notes too that the question was, I thought, harsh.
Okay. I was curious about that.
I'd like examples of that. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to hear examples of that.
Should be on the audio.
Yeah. Pardon?
Should be on the audio.
I'm asking for examples of that she found to be rude.
I think that's what we'd move to the audio.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, if you have nothing further, you can step back.
Yeah.
And I do not see that we have any complaints here, and I don't see a phone number provided. So we'll proceed. And Dr. James, you are the lead on this one.
Yeah, so, I certainly, some of the questions that I had initially were answered in the statement regarding whether other treatment options and other diagnostics were discussed with this owner, and it sounds like they were, that they aligned together on conservative treatment. It wasn't that was the only option available. And I think that's fairly standard practice in cases like this. I don't see anything in the medical exam that makes me go, oh, this one was emergent right now. This dog seems stable and conservative treatment in many cases works fine. I think the critical piece is educating the owner on what happens when the dog is not doing better or what to do when the dog is showing signs of worsening. But even that, I'm a little concerned because the owner clearly felt that the dog was worsening and ultimately within hours was at the emergency clinic. So I can't say that anything that this veterinarian did would have changed because the dog went to the emergency clinic. So I actually don't agree with the committee's findings in this case. I just don't see, I think that the conservative route was picked maybe in hindsight, we would have said, ah, you should have hospitalized and then IV fluids, but everything in hindsight's a little bit different. I'm failing to see it. So at this point, I would make a motion that we find no violations of our practice act and rules in the case of 2154.
Is there a second?
Second.
A motion on the floor and a second to dismiss case 2154. Any further discussion? I guess I would ask the veterinarians on, I mean, one of the points that they seem to make on the IC committee was there's always, I mean, pancreatitis, IV, just automatic. Pancreatitis, IV fluid. I mean, that seemed to be their mantra, and that seemed to be the stating, the deciding factor. It was in their discussion of the case and their deciding factor that led to them recommending a violation. So, am I understanding you correctly? That's just few people's opinion there.
Well,
that's not a general practice or a general opinion.
I think if you say, how are you going to treat pancreatitis, then IV fluids is definitely in your treatment plan. What I would say is a lot of cases don't necessarily get to the point that IV fluids are absolutely 100% necessary. So what you're trying to do initially is say, is this dog going to do okay with conservative treatment? If not, we're going to start IV fluids. So I actually believe if this doctor had been called later in the day at the time that the emergency clinic was called and this dog was getting worse and they had evaluated the dog would have been put on IV fluids. It's standard of care when the dog isn't getting better or you get to a severity level that warrants it. I didn't see anything in the exam that was very clear that it's like, oh my God, this dog was already there at the time it was seen in the morning. I don't know if, anyone else?
Yeah, it says in the record that its hydration was normal at the beginning, so.
So I guess another thing that I kind of noticed throughout this case as well as the other two was there was a consensus that the doctor husband did not think it was as serious as his wife, the nurse, thought it was. From the very beginning to the very end, she was the one that was worried that it was worse. He thought, I don't think it's that bad, but okay, I'll take it in. I mean, that's the impression I got through all of them. Now, that's not exactly what he said. So that part's kind of a he said, she said. All right, any further discussion? Motion on the floor is to dismiss 2154. Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
Nay.
That motion passes. 2154 is dismissed.